Hi, this is Steve Nerlich.
Why cheap astronomy?
Yeah, why? And this is Dear Cheap Astronomy, episode 129, More Rocks. It might be said that here at Cheap Astronomy, we are a little obsessed with asteroids. Although we're really more obsessed with mining them, and an important part of mining is prospecting, which for asteroids means going out to check them out. Dear Cheap Astronomy, what is Psyche really like? Psyche is an asteroid in the asteroid belt, and apparently a very metal-rich asteroid, which makes it a major prospecting target for budding asteroid miners. Psyche is also a NASA spacecraft launched on the 13th of October 2023. We're recording this episode about 1 month after that launch, when it was already over 15 million kilometres from Earth. And its destination? Yep, Psyche, the asteroid. There are currently three categories of asteroids. C-types, sometimes also called carbonaceous chondrites, which are mostly clay with a bit of rock. Then there's S-type for silicaceous asteroids. These are mostly rock with a bit of metal. And then there's M-type, metallic asteroids, which are mostly metallic. Although really, it might be better to say that 75% of all asteroids are carbonaceous, another 17% are silicaceous, and the remaining 8% are anything else, where anything else includes metallic M-types. Psyche is the largest M-type asteroid we know about, and it's actually the 13th largest of all the asteroids we know about. At least it's the 13th largest by diameter. It's actually the 10th largest by mass, and represents about 1% of the cumulative mass of all the known asteroids, where Ceres, the largest asteroid, is about 39% of that cumulative mass. The traditional explanation for Psyche being a big chunk of metal is that it's the remnant core of a larger protoplanet that had all its outer layers blown away in one or more collisions. However, this is the subject of a lot of debate, with doubters asking why there's no sign of any nearby debris, as well as pointing to the unlikeliness of one or more collisions so effectively taking off all the crust and mantle, but still leaving an intact metal core behind. Most M-type asteroids are identified by their relatively high albedo, that is, their shininess. But something as big as Psyche can also have its density estimated, first by measuring its size, which has been done by observing Psyche while it occultates background stars, and then you also measure its mass, which for Psyche can be estimated by measuring how much it gravitationally perturbs objects that it passes by in its solar orbit. Such size and mass measurements have landed a density estimate for Psyche of nearly 4 grams per cubic centimetre, which is fairly dense, but not dense enough for it to be solid iron, which is more like 8 grams per cubic centimetre. And with an object as big as Psyche, it's also possible to distinguish a few large-scale surface features. So while Psyche does have a high overall albedo, its surface is actually a bit patchy, with some high albedo areas, which are presumably metallic, mixed with duller areas, which may be silicon-based rock. So one alternate suggestion to explain Psyche's makeup is that there was a protoplanet that was completely obliterated in a collision, after which some of the remnant shrapnel gravitationally accreted back into an undifferentiated mix of metal and rock. Or it could be ferrovolcanism, a proposed hypothetical feature of small planetesimals, where, after their formation and differentiation into a metallic core and a rocky crust, they still briefly retain a molten metallic core. It's then proposed that the cooling and contracting outer layers might create sufficient internal pressure to force some of the molten core contents to squirt out through the crust, as long as the crust does not exceed 50 kilometers in thickness. And that's why you would only get such ferrovolcanism in planetesimals, not in actual planets. So, ferrovolcanism could explain how you get an object like Psyche that's not quite dense enough to be solid metal, but does have metallic surface features. Anyhow, all this should be clarified one way or another when Psyche the spacecraft arrives at Psyche the asteroid in 2029. Stay tuned.
This is the middle bit.
Being around 230 kilometers in diameter, Psyche is an asteroid you will need to chop bits off rather than, say, crashing it onto the moon. So the Psyche mission should help determine just what exactly is there to chop off in bits. And while we're on the subject of chopping bits off celestial objects, dear Cheap Astronomy, how is the Mars sample return mission going? We've often said that landing on Mars is one thing, getting off it again is quite another. This is the intention of the Mars sample return mission, which has already commenced insofar as the Perseverance rover is currently collecting samples for it, some of which have already been dropped off for later retrieval, while other samples remain stored within the rover. The current plan is for the return part of the sample return mission to be launched in 2027 and return samples to Earth by 2033, although, as is often the case with NASA timelines, these dates look aspirational at best, and recent talks of budget cuts at NASA make those dates look even less likely. Anyhow, to date, the Perseverance rover has collected 10 pairs of samples, and one of each of these pairs has been dropped at a location called Three Forks. The idea is that the sample retrieval lander will land near Three Forks, while the Perseverance rover is waiting nearby. The sample retrieval lander then has two options. If something's gone wrong with the rover and it can't get to the lander will have two retrieval helicopters that can pick up the already dropped samples from the Three Forks cache site. These retrieval helicopters will be similar in design to the currently flying helicopter Ingenuity, but they will also have little grabby things so they can collect the cache samples and fly them back to the lander. However, if the rover is still working, forget all that, because it already has identical pairs of the 10 Three Forks samples, plus a whole bunch more, which it will be able to hand on to the lander with the help of each vehicle's robotic arm. The whole business with the helicopters and the Three Forks cache samples is all about contingency planning. You don't want to spend hundreds of billions of dollars flying the sample retrieval lander to Mars, only to find the rover can't deliver because it got bogged somewhere. Anyway, if the rover does deliver, it will deliver twin copies of the 10 Three Forks tubes, plus an additional 28 samples it's collected from elsewhere. On board the sample retrieval lander will be a 3-meter-long rocket called the Mars Ascent Vehicle, or MAV, which is capable of launching about 12 kilograms of payload into Mars orbit. That 12 kilograms will be probably 30 of the sample tubes collected, mostly filled with a mix of Mars drill cores, scooped-up regolith, and captured dusty atmosphere. Perseverance actually landed with 43 tubes, five of which are called witness tubes. These tubes will have been flown alongside and handled in the same way as the real sample tubes, and they will have been opened in the Mars environment and then sealed again on Mars. It's a way of testing whether the real samples have somehow been contaminated in the process of being launched from Earth to Mars, or otherwise corrupted in the process of sample collection, handling, and return. Current planning is that two of those witness tubes will be returned to Earth along with the other rover samples, or if things go pear-shaped with the rover, the 10 contingency samples that were dropped at Three Forks will be flown back, of which one is a witness tube. So, that is the plan. But there's still a whole lot of issues to work through. The proposed sample retrieval lander is in no respect built, nor is there yet a clear plan for how it will land, noting it will be the most massive vehicle we will have landed so far. Will it use retro rockets? A sky crane? Who knows? There's also issues with the Mars Ascent vehicle. It's not considered feasible to position it upright and have it blasting straight off the top of the lander, so current thinking is that it will be flung upwards off the lander with some kind of a spring system and then have its rockets ignite while it's in mid-air. Nothing like this has ever been done before, but it could be feasible. Similarly, there's an ambitious plan for the launch MAV to dock autonomously with the European Space Agency's Earth Return Orbiter, which will be waiting in Mars orbit, even though it hasn't been built yet. But again, all that could also be feasible. But if you're thinking this all sounds a bit too speculative to really get off the ground, particularly off Mars's ground, well, you might not be the only one thinking along those lines. As of October 2023, the budget for the Mars sample return mission is on hold and its future looks a little uncertain. That's not so unusual in this business, and it is likely that a revised plan may get back on the rails after some further wrangling and possibly budget cuts. Like people say, space is hard. And like we often say, it's also slow and expensive.
This is the end bit.
So, there you go. Since we recorded that segment, the Mars sample return mission is even more on ice, with its budget now expected to be completely cut. The best hope for a revival might be China's plans for its own sample return mission, proposed, with a fair degree of optimism, for a 2028 launch. Whenever they do it, NASA may find cause to shake the dust off its own sample return plans. But that's it for another episode of Dear Cheap Astronomy. If you've got a space science question, or you just want a sample returned, why not write to cheapastro@gmail.com and we'll try and retrieve it for you. Thanks for listening. Steve Nerlich, Cheap Astronomy.